So musical. Sound like Chief Wiggum, one of the B-sharps. All right, folks, it is Papa's Football Podcast. I'm John Papa Giorgio, joined by Howard Flood. Show site, pfpod.com. Go there for every episode we've ever done if you want to stay on top of all these things. All these episodes we crap out once a week. Sure, you can do the site, but you know the best thing to do? Absolute best, find us on Stitcher using the Stitcher app. Subscribe to us, rate us, you know, leave comment, love, all that stuff. And if you have an iDevice, use the podcast app. It's pretty good. I used to just say that, and they were meaningless words, Howard. You know, and I'm like, put on a condom. That's about as much as it resonated with me. Use, you know, practice safe sex, put on condoms. But I've actually started using the podcast app, and it's really good. Like, no joke. It tells you within seconds. I upload the show, and I mean, I'll check on my phone as soon as it's done, and it's there 10 seconds later. Technology's creepy. What I'm saying is in 10 years, we'll all be living in the Matrix. Mm. So I hope you enjoy having a cord plugged in your asshole. All right, so we just wrapped up the divisional round, correct?
Yes.
It was the divisional. It's always a little weird to keep track of.
We were fortunate to have one upset. It's not that exciting when you have a 1-2 matchup in both conferences for the championship games. So I was actually happy to see that. I wasn't happy to see necessarily Indianapolis pull off that upset, but you know, hey, we got somebody other than a 1 or 2 seed in one of these games upcoming this week. So.
Well, you get to crow. I last week went 3-1 in my picks. You went 2-2.
Yeah.
And I decided to break ranks with you and pick the Cowboys instead of the Packers, and it blew up in my big dumb face.
A lot of people picked the Cowboys this week, though. Everybody looked at that that calf injury for Aaron Rodgers as being the death knell for the Green Bay Packers.
I didn't even think about it. The Packers have had that one good postseason run, and since they got that Super Bowl, dude, how many postseason wins have they had? 1, 2? I mean,
yeah, and every single one of those wins on the Super Bowl championship season was on the road, so
yes,
they haven't done
exactly
that well at Lambeau.
They've had to underdog it.
Yeah,
and you know, they're not the first team to do that. The New York Giants, both of their winning, you know, Super Bowl winning seasons come to mind.
I guess that's why, looking at that game, we have to talk about the no call, the no catch, the reversed catch that Dez Bryant had with 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter.
Well, yeah, that's kind of what I was going to say. Much more so, like, you come out of a divisional round weekend, you've got a lot to talk about. The four teams who are left are playing to go to the Super Bowl. That in and of itself is all the story you need.
Right.
But these were two of the four games were, by, I don't know, by my recollection, incredibly, incredibly drama filled, man. Like stories unto themselves. If these were regular season games, these would be stories. But these were deciding who was going to play for the conference championship.
Yeah, and so for the second week in a row in the playoffs, we've now had the top story, instead of being the game, being officiating.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That wasn't your podcast or my mic cutting out, by the way. I took a sip of water and no noise came out of my mouth as I said absolutely. But I assure you, your equipment's intact. Yeah, man. You had the Dez Bryant call / non-call, whatever the hell you want to call it, that completely shifted what went on in the Green Bay-Dallas game. And then so all the drama, by the way, on Sunday. Saturday's games, the Ravens game, good. The Carolina game, horrific.
And but drama-filled.
Yeah.
At least till you know, the start of the fourth quarter.
Yeah, there's chippiness. Is that what we look for? Yeah, they're kind of getting in, you know, getting in with each other. But the huge stories were both out of Sunday's games.
Absolutely.
And the early game.
Well,
you had the non-call or the call with Dez Bryant and his reception or lack thereof, and we'll get to that in a second. And then Sunday's afternoon / evening game, you saw Peyton Manning looking very un-Peyton. To paraphrase John Goodman in Lebowski, you're looking very undude right now.
Yeah, it frustrates me because the coverage may dwell. It's hard to see. Some of the reporters I see now covering Indianapolis as they head to New England are really focusing on the fact that New England didn't look like it won against Denver. Peyton just wasn't capable of completing a pass downfield. They gave him opportunities to complete passes down the sidelines, and I've never seen him that inaccurate before on deep passing.
Do we want to do that one first? Or do we want to do Dez?
Yeah, let's start with Peyton, because the latest news as we're recording this is that it turns out he had a quad tear for the last month, Peyton Manning. So maybe we should really focus on that.
Yeah, I'm going to call myself Pops Radamus on this one. I stood up because for those who watched football semi-religiously through the season, and if you're listening to this piece of crap, you can't get enough football. Like, at this point, you're just jacking it to YouTube videos of, like, Bo Jackson and Tecmo Bowl.
Whatever, man. We offer a different take on these things. I mean, I'm going to get tired of watching ESPN say the same thing from every person because they all hang out at lunch and talk about the show. And they talk about what they saw on SportsCenter. They just say the same thing on most of these damn networks. So we give you a different take, man.
Should we just steal Booyah and cool it on the other side of the pillow?
Oh, man.
Can we just take that
you're
at this
point?
You're
a terrible person, man.
Can we vulture that?
The real reason people listen to us is because you're a terrible person. That's why.
Yeah, exactly. I mix sports commentary with just abject contempt for humanity. So as soon as, okay, first, yeah, you're deep into, we're establishing that. If you're listening to this, you're deep into the NFL. You're watching every week. About 6-7 weeks ago, Denver transitioned, if you will, into a power run team. They transitioned the same way that, like, Bruce Jenner has transitioned into a woman. They haven't done it well. He's still got a dick. Pretty much he grew out his nails and his hair, and he's like, I'm Brucina now.
Yeah.
And that's how effectively Denver became a power run team. And when you're paying Peyton Manning $19 million a year, maybe number 46 on your checklist is transition away from Peyton Manning and become a power run team.
With C.J. Anderson, who was an undrafted player. So.
Yeah, he was doing great, but undrafted free agents doing good things at running back, it's not the same as like getting Russell Wilson in the third round. It yeah. happens a lot. You know, like Alfred Morris was, what, a sixth rounder? And
right.
Say what you will about the Skins, that dude's pretty good.
Still, he was drafted.
Yeah.
I mean, there's something to be said about the difference. Like, Alandis Gary and
just
Terrell Davis.
Doing
were
a Marky
drafted.
Mark walk on.
Yeah, no. I mean, so CJ Anderson, good player. He had a great play on a fourth down conversion late in that game just to keep Denver in.
Yeah. But,
and you could see, oh, it was the best. Did you see the slow-mo where they're like, check out the reaction on both sidelines? Chuck Pagano throws his headset, and on the other sideline, John Fox is just saying in slow motion, great fucking play. And they showed it on national network television. I'm like, you guys reviewed that and showed it in slow motion. He's clearly using the F word.
That reminds me of like an old Metallica clip when they're promoting the Black Album and Lars was like, censor this. They just really slowly mouth fuck and they blurred his mouth.
Yeah. It was exactly like that, for sure.
Oh, man. But for 2 months now, Peyton Manning, and you can say he's lost the zip on his ball pretty much since he got like a shower rod for a spine.
Yeah.
Post-surgery. It's looked especially limp and crappy the past 2 months. They've gone run first, and a lot of people were like, they are doing what they need to do to win in the postseason. This is how they're going to beat Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was BS for two things. One, if that was your plan, you're probably going to do it during training camp and like start the year with it.
Yeah.
You're not going to go halfway through the season like, oh yeah, the whole defense wins championships thing. Let's do that. And two, like, they're running, I'm sorry, the past five games, who are you saying? CJ
Anderson.
Anderson, okay.
They lost Monty Ball pretty early in the season.
Yeah. He's had, like, a sick, like, 4 or 5 game stretch, but I still wouldn't say that their running game was anything that blew my mind. Like, you wouldn't look at that and be like, oh, that can't be stopped. You know, punch their ticket in Arizona, boys.
Yeah, for me, I just thought it was good they were building into the running game because I was naive to think that Peyton Manning was going to be able to pass better if people tried to focus on the run game in the playoffs. And what I learned this weekend is that, no, Peyton actually couldn't throw the ball, as was suspected about a month ago by many people. So
yeah, I knew something was like really up with him. And last night, as they lost, every sports pundit was going on and on about, oh, we've seen the last of Peyton Manning. This is how a storied career ends. It's the same way that New England season ended in week 4 when the Chiefs beat the fuck out of them. I remember that, And now Peyton's career is dead because pundits have said so. And I stood up. I wasn't even drunk. That's the sad part. We ate pizza like fat kids with no beer. We drank Sody Pop. And I said two things might have happened tonight. One, we really did see the end of Peyton, and his arm just fucking blew out like the transmission of, like, you know, a Civic with 350,000 on it.
Yeah.
And two, he is going to come out tomorrow and be like, I ripped my fucking scrotum halfway through the season and they staple gun my balls in, and I've been playing with loose balls this whole season. Or like, they found a fucking tumor in my spine and they yanked it out. Like, he's going to come out with some totally undisclosed, he didn't let it leak because he's that kind of Terminator sort of competitor injury. And he's going to be like, haha, motherfuckers, this ain't the end of me. I've been banged up this whole year.
He has been listed with a thigh injury, apparently.
Yes.
The extent to which his thigh was injured is not disclosed accurately. But the fact that there was a thigh injury that made him probable, I guess. I don't even think the list is questionable during this time. Yeah. He's been playing hurt, apparently. And that's why I really want him to come back next year. I'm actually relieved that it was not his inability to just say, like, to endure an NFL season into the playoffs, you have to have like a pretty solid health standard. And I just thought he wasn't healthy enough. And the reality is he got injured along the way.
Dude, he apparently had a quad tear. For those that don't know their anatomy or lift or anything, the quads are, I believe, the biggest muscle in your body, right?
Yeah, it's broken up into several parts.
Yeah, so. It was four heads, hence the quadricep. But he had a quad tear, and I believe maybe two of the heads. I don't know that part. And it was so bad that the bruising extended from the site of the tear to the back of his leg.
Oh, my gosh.
And people want to know what bruising from a muscle tear looks like. Look up Scott Mendelson bench press pec tear injury. This is my favorite muscle tear bruise. And I haven't shown this picture to Howie yet.
Oh, no.
We're going to scroll past the cock photos on my phone.
Okay.
And here is Scott Mendelson, Jewish powerlifter. Good for him, defying those stereotypes. There you go. Oh, that's nice. Turn off.
Boo.
Hold on.
It's powering up.
Powering back up. All right. Come on. Show. So, there you go.
Holy cow. That's not healthy.
For those not looking at home, because you can't, it's a podcast, Scott Mendelson has you can Google it, but he has a purple bruise that extends down to like his fifth rib or some crap, down his entire left arm, up to his back, and across his right pec, and he has a tear in the left pec.
He's got to be at least, what would you put him at, 260? He's a big man.
That guy's, 280.
Yeah, yeah. I just can't tell how tall he is, but that's a big dude. That's a lot of bruising.
Yeah.
That's a lot of skin to cover for a bruise. My goodness.
That is a huge amount of geography.
So here's what I'm hoping for Peyton, though. I would really like to see him come back next year at a lowered salary with a succession plan being put in place for the next Denver quarterback. I really think, hopefully, there's somebody available later in the first round of
the
play.
You mean Brock Osweiler is not setting your heart aflutter?
Hey, you know what? Maybe he is good enough. I don't know. I really do think that they should try to find the next person now and have Peyton come back at a reduced salary. Because the reality is, he is older. He could get injured just like he was this year. And you need somebody who can come in that people can believe is capable of replacing Peyton. And you just cannot do it with him making the money that he's making. So he did take, not necessarily a pay cut, but he could have been paid more this year than he was actually paid. He just knew it would have affected the overall quality of the team. He needs to take a bigger pay cut and come back.
Yeah, I don't know if that happens because I believe the cap is going up 10 mil this year. And not only that, Peyton likes his money. Peyton. Pay Peyton.
10 to 12, man. Come on. Think about it. Like, that's a $5 million, $7 million pay cut. You've made a lot in your career. You're just killing it now that they legalized it in Denver and you run four Papa John's.
Exactly.
Like, you don't need that cash, man. Like, you need to leave a better legacy than what happened.
I would, if I were in Denver, by the way, and I had his FU money, I would just open carryout joints next to every dispensary. just a Chipotle next to every dispensary. And then I would turn to my children and I would hold them in the air like the Lion King. And I would say, all this will someday be yours.
But yeah, I mean, that's why going back to this game, it was Denver losing, not really Indianapolis winning. Because when you look at Indianapolis, most people don't believe that they can play New England within 10 points. So far, since Andrew Luck has been in Indianapolis, they have yet to play New England within 20 points.
The way he passed, I don't know how you could look at that and be like, this is natural, you know, decline taking place here. Like,
it was surprising.
Some lame duck shit previously, don't get me wrong. But what you saw out of him in that second half of the season, like, I watched that game last night, and I'm like, is his vision fucked? Like, he was overthrowing guys at some point, no exaggeration, by like 8 to 10 yards.
It was wildly inaccurate, and being overthrown was a weird part.
Dude, fucking Rex Grossman could have come off the bench at that point, and I would have been like, oh, thank God, we're being saved from Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
So it was not pretty. It was the most, especially, I got a Peyton rod, I'm not going to lie, most disappointing game.
I mean, let's talk about that AFC Championship game coming up now, though. You have New England, which narrowly defeated a good Baltimore team. I mean, but to me, that Baltimore team was the one shot of someone beating New England at Foxborough. Now we're looking at a game where you have, I mean, Indianapolis traveling to play at New England. Like, what are your prospects for this game right now?
I think, look, I'll give away what I'm calling both games, because they're both rematches of regular season play, right?
No one can pick the upset in earnest. Nobody can actually make an argument for either of these teams seriously winning. Like, obviously there's a possibility, but you can't just, like, say, based on paper, that you can, on the balance of the probabilities, that either road team has a decent shot of winning. These are tough games for these road teams, man.
Yeah, there's nothing that I saw out of either team, be it Green Bay or the Colts, that makes me think they're going to march into enemy territory. Two teams that, by the way, when these guys lost to them earlier in the season, they were dismantled.
Yeah.
They were pulled apart. I mean, like, fucking hanging on the meat hook like Frankie Carbone style, man.
Yeah.
They were dead and frozen. Like, that was the season opener, if I recall, correct?
Yes.
Green Bay just getting hacked by Seattle. And then Indy lost to the Patriots by what, like 21 points or something?
At Indianapolis.
Yeah, and that was like 4 weeks ago or something.
That was in the Dome.
Oh, it was a Sunday night game, right? That was like one of those games where you punch out early.
Yeah, and there's a big problem that faces the Colts, and its name is Rob Gronkowski. They just don't have that same talent at tight end on the Broncos. And it's the difference between Julius Thomas is a great fantasy tight end. He put up good numbers for people. But Julius Thomas kind of, he can interfere with a game plan. Rob Gronkowski is on another level because you have to make your game plan on defense around the existence of that guy. So that was a strange thing with Baltimore. Baltimore said that our game plan for Rob Gronkowski is we're going to try to shut down everything else that New England is doing. But once Rob Gronkowski started to get open, it really gave the rest of the team confidence, and that led to their comeback. So they were really shutting down a lot of options outside of Gronk early, and yeah, eventually Baltimore just wasn't able to hold on to that lead.
Gronk is insane.
Yeah.
Gronk is like, what is it, the penultimate, is that the word I'm looking for? The penultimate episode of Game of Thrones this year, the next to the last one, where there's the assault on like whatever the ice castle's name is, where Jon Snow lives, and the people of the north bust out frost giants. And there's two giants that are like 15 feet tall,
yeah,
and they're just smacking around the Night's Watch. Like, just get off me, you fleas. That's what Gronk looks like. He looks like a frost giant on the field of battle.
Huh. Yeah, no, he's definitely going to be a problem for the Colts. I don't see how they're going to suddenly figure out how to cover him.
What is the biggest, like, I'm asking this, like, no BS. What is the biggest penalty that can befall a team if on the first tackle of the first play, Gronk comes out and you stop him? And as he's standing up, you get one guy who's semi-expendable and just goes, pow! And, you know, Shoru Ken's his balls right back into his body. I mean, just like as deliberately as it gets. Just like I'm caving his testicles in to take him out of the game.
I think the penalty will be that player is going to have his head stomped by a New England Patriot that's also on the field.
Okay.
Because you cannot. I don't know what would ever happen in an NFL game if you saw someone deliberately injure in that manner, where it's just clear that it's part of a strategy.
Yes.
I think that's where it ceases to be a football game, and whichever team had their player go down, I'm not even a football player.
You're saying that is the line that cannot be crossed.
Yeah, no, if you're intentionally doing that, like, I think that game is over because there will be an actual brawl, and, like, multiple people will be severely hurt because the guy who did it is going to be disemboweled, you know? Like, something bad is going to happen immediately after that.
Really?
Yeah, no, like, life-threatening, potentially, type injury.
Oh,
if somebody
man.
Did that on purpose, you can't let that happen in football.
What if a guy goes rogue, and he just kicks Gronk in the balls, and then he goes like, you know, woo, woo, like bugs after he kisses Elmer Fudd, and then he just runs out of the stadium.
I just think the natural reaction is for one guy to, like, knock him down as hard as he possibly can, and then another Patriot come up and, like, bend the guy's knee backwards, just hyperextend it purposefully for everybody at home to watch. Because it's like, this is what happens when you purposefully go after our best player. Like, your career's done.
So it'd be like Charlie Murphy beating the white guy on the Mad Real World. That's what you're telling me.
You can't do it. You just can't do it.
Okay. I suppose that answers that, man. Yeah, I guess the last interesting aspect, getting back to the Broncos for just a bit, John Fox apparently wasn't out for interviews today. There was a very strong, again, this is all rumor and speculation, and if Peyton's like, dude, I'll be fine next year and I'm coming back, John Fox will as well. But there was a very strong current throughout the Twitterverse, if you, God, just kill me for using that word, that John Fox was actually, like, cooked as soon as Peyton left. Like, if he left and was like, dude, I'm calling it a day, John Fox's ass was out.
I don't think John Fox would want to stay either.
Yeah, it's interesting, man. He has more than a lot of coaches out there. I feel John Fox is almost not, he's not given credit for, like, either the successes or the failures of that team. He occupies a weird space compared to a lot of other coaches where it's like, you just view it as like, oh, the Broncos lost, Peyton screwed up.
Yeah.
Does anyone really go out there and they're like, man, dude, they were stomped in the Super Bowl last year. Does anyone go, that was because John Fox failed to plan properly? All you heard was like, well, that's because Peyton's not a clutch player. It's very weird. And the same thing, I'm going to segue to the Cowboys this way, the same thing goes on with Jason Garrett. Like, Jason Garrett's record, objectively, is not bad at all. He's did what? Is it, was this year 5 or 4 for him as their coach, as the Cowboys coach?
I can't remember.
He's had at least 3 8-8s, and then he had this year where they went, they were 11-5?
12-4.
12-4.
Yeah.
Which is great, and they looked really good for a lot of the season. Beat the shit out of Seattle. Beat the shit out of Seattle in a way I haven't seen any other team in the last 2 to 3 years beat the shit out of Seattle.
Yeah, and they would have been a great matchup at Seattle upcoming.
Went into Seattle and beat the shit out of Seattle.
Yeah.
You do not see that happen often. I have not seen it, again, in the last 2 to 3 years. And they went in there and fucking beat them, man. Like,
yeah.
Resoundingly. I forgot what the final score was, but it was like Seattle got a garbage time touchdown to make that shit look closer. And he gets no credit. Again, he's the same situation where it's like, Tony Romo fucked up, that's why they lost, or this is Jerry's show. And
yeah.
It's interesting, especially for Garrett, because he's a free agent now, man. They didn't re-up him. And as soon as his season ended, he can do whatever the hell he wants. And it's like, our team's going to see anything in him outside of, like, this whole time he was just kind of, I don't know, a dude who viewed Tony Romo. You know, he didn't coach Tony Romo. He just was a guy who could cope with Jerry Jones and watch Tony Romo play on Sundays. He and John Fox occupy a very weird space, whereas other coaches are held completely accountable. It's like when Jerry Jones fires Jason Garrett, you know, every year is like, Jerry's going to fire Jason. It's like, yeah, but Jerry runs the show. Who really gives a shit who the coach is?
Right.
It's a very bizarre situation. And I'm a huge Redskins fan, but you still feel like, as much as Snyder's a fuck-up who has his hands in everything,
yeah,
it's still the coach on the field who screwed up and needed to get fired. Whereas with Garrett, I don't know, man. You get that weird puppety Darth Vader to Palpatine feel.
He finally has moved into the next level.
Yes,
he really has leveled up, and it is unfortunate that, you know, that catch was reversed on the challenge by Green Bay, because that would have changed the balance of the game. That would have been basically a setup for Dallas to score the go-ahead touchdown with less than 5 minutes left in the game.
Well, yeah. Let's for those that didn't watch the game, it was very close for most of the day. And for a long time, I was like, oh, my upset pick of Green Bay, or I'm sorry, of Dallas is going to pay out. And ha-ha, F to you, Howard. And near the end of the, what was it, like 6 minutes left in the game?
It was about five, yeah.
Yeah, fourth and one, if I recall.
Fourth and two.
Tony Romo uncorks and throws something like a 40-yarder to Dez Bryant.
It's a ballsy call. Totally ballsy.
Ballsy as shit, man. You got DeMarco Murray, who can probably smash for that too.
Yeah.
And instead you're like, fuck it, I want the touchdown. Throws, Dez Bryant makes what, to me, I'm sorry, I saw what he did, and I was never like, oh, that was a catch. I can't believe it was overturned. But to the average person, like if your mom sat down and saw this play,
yeah,
and saw Dez Bryant do what he did, she'd be like, wow, he caught the ball. That was a spectacular catch. He caught the ball on like the 1 yard line.
I mean, you do see him bobble it a little bit as he like is rolling over in the end zone.
Yes, but I think
everybody saw that.
I think what got people was Dez makes his catch, rolls over on it, and you're like, did the ground touch it? And the answer for at least a large part of that catch is no. He had his huge, you know, I wish I had hands like that. What it would mean for my dick size, I'll never comprehend. He had his huge cricket bat of a hand underneath this thing and rolls over and keeps his hand under it. And then, only then, kind of extends, it almost looks like, to see if he can get in the end zone, at which point the ball just, like, smashes right into the ground with
that
dumb jutting of his hand.
That's one of the great frustrations that so many coaches have in football of, like, so many guys want the TD. Their eyes get big because they see pay dirt. And instead of just making the play that's needed, which is a first down, he thought he could get those extra, like, 3 feet or whatever he needed to get the touchdown.
Which is just beyond unnecessary.
And so this is, at the end of the day, this never would have happened if he hadn't been that much greedier.
Just
taking the 40-yard gain on a fourth and two play.
He is not Reed Richards, Mr. Fantastic, well, for those that had sex before 25.
It starts at the top, man. I mean, it's just like that play call is a greedy play call to begin with.
Yeah. I call it ballsy.
Yeah, but it's one that your player, who's being asked to catch this ball downfield, he understands what fourth and two means.
Mm-hmm.
He knows you're asking him to basically score.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to try to score. That's what it is.
Yeah.
You have to go out of your way to just be like, just catch it. So, I don't know. It's an unusual play call. I understand that we do want to see people taking risks in the NFL. I'm a guy who likes that. I don't like always seeing the safe call. But, you know, what happened here, if he hadn't got greedy, he would have definitely caught the ball. And instead, we're having to split hairs about it, and people are trying to ignore that aspect of it.
Yeah, it's called the Calvin Johnson rule, because it happened, I think, what, like 4 years ago?
A couple years ago,
it was a week one game, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Calvin Johnson against the Bears, and he comes up, makes what looks like a catch to pretty much everyone, drops down, and almost immediately, like kind of when he's on the ground, gets rid of the ball.
He puts it down. Part of his celebration was just like leaving the ball on the ground as he got up.
Yes. And it was ruled because he went to the ground while making the catch and then did not come up in possession of the ball. It was not a catch. And the Lions lost the game on that one.
Listen, I mean, that's why it's so important for players to know these situations, because Aaron Rodgers cited that immediately when he saw it.
He's in the division, so that was huge.
But every NFL player watched that play and said, how is that not a catch? Because they, like back when this happened to Calvin Johnson, everybody was like, how is that not a catch? Especially offensive players. Aaron Rodgers is a guy who's on offense. He wants that touchdown catch if he's throwing it. So when he saw it happening to Detroit, his mind was like, oh, crap, I never want that to happen to myself or my receivers. You have to have that conversation. You just have to know it. So there's a real problem with Dez Bryant not having that information when it came to just like tuck the ball. And so to me, it's a simple resolution in the mind of the player. I know he tweeted out that he wanted the rule fixed. I know a lot of people are like screaming out for, changes in the way that we call these games. But the reality is, listen, I was reading a complaint about this on some blog. I don't think it was CBS. It was one of the major sports agencies saying that we need the referees to be involved less. They're like changing it with the way that review is. Well, the reality is like there's only two challenges by coaches. Mike McCarthy, this is all he had at that point in the game to prevent like the score change. So I don't mind the strategic use of getting a call reversed at this stage of the game. I know it was controversial just based on like the closeness of the call. And yet like I don't want to hear people say that we need to get rid of replay because of this.
Yeah, we absolutely don't. What we need to do is, I think, make more logical rules and cut down on the amount of rules. Not only that, just get better refs. Although, by the letter of the law, these guys made the right call. Like, you can't bitch about the refs because, hey, first of all, there's a little place called Green Bay where they're like, go refs, you got this one right. But they did. They enforced what's on the books.
Two wrongs don't make a right, but, you know, this was like a far better call than what happened when Detroit lost to Dallas, so.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all. If you want to get cosmic about it, you can just be like, hey, karma's a motherfucker, ain't it?
Yeah. So that's why nobody's really feeling that bad about the Cowboys, because so many people went into this game feeling like they didn't even deserve the shot at Green Bay.
Yeah, and Detroit was actually really classy about it. Like, the official team tweeter, the official team Twitter account tweeted a photo of the whole non-catch catch that Megatron made, and it said, sorry, Dallas Cowboys, we know the feeling.
Yeah.
Hashtag complete the process. I mean, if I ran that account, I'd just be like, ah, motherfucker! Suck it! And then I'd link to a picture of a cock.
Thus ended John's career with the Detroit Lions.
Yeah, exactly. I would just send Lemon Party or Tub Girl. Like, this is what you deserve. And yeah, I would be gone by Monday.
So it's unfortunate because, again, like in the NFC, team that most likely could upset Seattle at Seattle was Dallas, and they're out.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at the AFC, to me, the team most likely to upset New England, it was
Baltimore by far.
And that game is behind us now. I mean, Baltimore played well enough to win, but, you know, they ultimately didn't execute what they needed to in the second half. They really just fell apart at around like the 10-minute mark starting in the third quarter.
These were my thoughts while watching each game. Like, Carolina, Seattle, that was by far, to me, the shittiest, most unwatchable game.
But I thought it was going to be as close as it was going into the fourth quarter. I said last week on the show, I'm like, why can't Carolina slow down the Seattle offense? It's not a juggernaut, and they play decent defense. And it was like they were within a touchdown well into the fourth quarter.
That's the recipe for every Seattle win I've ever seen, though. It's always they kind of play close. They're in the lead, but they go into the half playing close. And the other team's like, yeah, why not us? And then by the end of the third, you know, start of the fourth, they run away with it. They've worn down the other team. It's just boring as shit. It's like watching the Klitschko's box. You know, they're just like, brah, I have 18-foot-long arms. Brah, brah, brah. No one will get near me. I'll jab you to death. It's just boring shit that follows the same script every week. And then Baltimore was maddening because they would look on fire for a possession or two.
Yeah.
And you're like, they've got this shit. And then it would be 20 minutes of nothing.
Yeah.
Because twice in the game, they go up by two touchdowns.
Yeah.
Two fucking touchdowns. And then relinquish that lead. I mean, I've never seen a team look more in command and then just roll over and be like, haha, we're kidding. Fuck us in the ass. We suck.
I mean, they still continue to move the ball after their fourth touchdown. They just couldn't get in the end zone. That was the most infuriating part to me. Like, the inability to close out was the most frustrating thing watching that Baltimore game, because they really had the opportunity to turn this into another blowout playoff victory at New England. They'd done it before, and they could have done it again, and yet they just couldn't close the deal this year. It was really unfortunate. So I am looking at this upcoming slate of games, and I think we're in for a third week of flawed football from the NFL playoffs. Yeah. Again, the last 2 weeks have been stories about officiating being the top headline. That's not good. That's not a good place to be in. And now we're looking at two games where, like, you have outright favorites. And so, I don't know. It would be nice, I guess, if one of those games resulted in an upset. Because to me, like, the most boring Super Bowl would be Seattle versus New England.
Well, yeah, I'm going to level with you. I'm not saying this for comedic effect or to be dramatic on air. If it's a Seattle-New England Super Bowl, these are the two teams I hate the most. Like, okay, I hate the Cowboys slightly more than the Seahawks. But you're talking two of my top three teams that I revile in the league, like really cannot stand.
Yeah.
If that was the Super Bowl, it might be something I check out like in passing with friends. Like I might go to a friend's house and be like, dude, we're tossing on the Xbox fast.
Yeah.
Like 5-7 minutes. Because what do I have to gain? Two teams I despise. One of them's going to get another ring? Fuck that.
Yeah. And the thing I don't like about that matchup is I just think, you know, in the same way that Indianapolis, I don't know if you heard this, but Indianapolis went into the game against Peyton and the Broncos and said, we're just going to borrow the playbook that Seattle used on
defense. Super Bowl, yeah.
From the Super Bowl. I think if it's Seattle versus New England, that Seattle defense is just going to take a page out of the Giants playbook from those two Super Bowl victories. And they have the front four to go after Tom Brady. And so I have a hard time believing that they're not going to be able to pass rush effectively against the Patriots to keep them low scoring. Now, whether or not like Russell Wilson can lead that Seattle offense to enough points to win against New England, different story. I think he will, if that's the matchup. But yeah, that to me is why it's the least compelling of the possible games that we could have in the Super Bowl. So that's why, like, for us, instead of like trying to talk about, you know, like what needs to happen in these two conference championship games for, you know, Green Bay or Indianapolis to make the upset, I'd rather just talk to you about like how you see these other possible playoff matchups, how these other possible matchups would look to you. Like, let's say it's Brady versus Rodgers, or, you know, a great one to me would be Luck versus Wilson. I think that would be fantastic to see two guys who came out of the same draft up against each other. That would be amazing.
I mean, as long as one of the two teams, because the Colts, as much as I hate Ursay, I like Andrew Luck. I love the whole like NFL memes thing that's come up around him, where they've like photoshopped his head onto a Civil War general.
Yeah.
And I think it's SB Nation that does it. Like after every game, it's like, dearest Martha, the Giants of New York dispatched our army with great,
so good,
with renowned vigor. Yeah. It's very funny like that. I like him.
I like him a lot, yeah.
Yeah, and
I like Wilson too, though. You don't like Wilson.
I fucking hate the guy.
Yeah.
He's just too, like I've always said, he's too white for my taste. He's not a real brother like me. Wilson, there's too much success, too much everything good. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's Christian as hell. He's successful on the field. He was a third round pick. I hate every bit of his narrative, man.
Wow, you're a jerk. He's going to be a governor of Virginia one day. You know that, right?
Yes, I do. Man, he drives me batty. I don't know. I get tongue-tied about how much the guy rubs me. Because I'm the dick here. I think it's like, why do you hate him? Does he do anything bad? It's like, no, he does too much good.
You're jealous. I think the bottom line is you know that the RG3 trade was a mistake, because every success that Russell Wilson has reminds you that it was a waste.
That's a huge part of it. Are you kidding me? Yeah. And not only that, I resent every success that Seattle has, because I think they've dispatched the Skins three times now in the postseason.
Yeah.
If you want to talk like the real rivalry that the Skins have, their last four postseason trips, it was like they lost to the Bucks, then God, 8 years later or some shit, they beat the Bucks, lose to Seattle, then they lose to Seattle again, and then they lose to Seattle, and RG3 breaks his knee in a million shards.
I know you don't want to see Seattle in the Super Bowl, but I would rather see, if Seattle had to go, I'd much rather see him play Indianapolis than the Patriots. Like, you would tune in for that game, right? You're saying you wouldn't watch New England play Seattle, but would you watch Andrew Luck?
I would watch
Colts?
Any of the other three possible permutations.
Okay.
Of Super Bowl. And I would love, and I mean love, to see Green Bay versus the Colts.
Yeah, I mean, I would actually like to see Rodgers go up against Brady. I think that's a great narrative as well.
That would be great, too.
Yeah.
Seattle. Either I want Seattle to go away, dude.
Okay.
Like, I want Marshawn to quit. I want, like, I don't know, like.
Well, he might go to a different team. Can you at least root for Marshawn Lynch if he goes somewhere else? He's a good player, man.
If he went somewhere else, I wouldn't mind him.
Yeah.
Like, I'd be fine with that. The only dudes I really hate on that squad are Richard Sherman and Wilson. That's it. Those are the guys that I really hate. Like, you know what I want most is, like, them to be caught fucking making out or sucking each other off by, like, TMZ. And their reputations in the black community are just destroyed. And every other team just chants faggot when they get on the field. Faggots. And it works when they're on offense or defense. You know, it applies to either. That's all I want. I just want to see Russell Wilson with a huge head of dreads in his lap. And then Richard Sherman holding up his Campbell's soup holding hands to, like, cover his face while he's got a mouthful of Russell Wilson
dip. You can't use the F word in the NFL anymore, man.
I mean,
openly gay practice squad player.
Yeah.
Who's now engaged, by the way.
Oh, to the dude he made out with?
I'm not sure. Oh. Maybe he has a new boo. Haven't been following his sex life recently. Don't know about you.
I mean, we're not talking about Italian soccer throwing bananas at a black player here. We're just screaming a word. A horrible word. Yeah. But that would make it worthwhile to me. Like, if Seattle wins and then we get pictures of Russell Wilson fucking and sucking Richard Sherman.
You would masturbate and then you would laugh.
Yeah, I'd hate bait. I'd be like, oh, that's, I hate it, but it's so hot.
Yeah. It's everything I ever asked for in life.
Yeah, exactly. I wouldn't masturbate to the pictures. I would masturbate to the devastation of their two careers. But yeah, I would think about that every time I needed to get up to perform. Like, remember that time Russell Wilson was piped in the ass by Richard Sherman?
I'm the opposite. I want Seattle to repeat because you know me. I am a profound hater of the logic of spending a high draft pick in the first round in order to get a quarterback. Andrew Luck being the exception, though, I will say he was no-brainer, slam dunk. As much as I dislike Jim Irsay, he came out after the game and he talked once more about why it was the right move to pick Luck and drop Manning. And again, like, you can get on Irsay's case, but the reality is everybody at the time Luck came out said you have to do it. I think it was just obvious.
There was no debate, and no one knew what the hell that Peyton had in the tank, man.
Yeah, you've never had a guy come out as physically and mentally prepared to play in the NFL as Andrew Luck. And, you know, he's been developed the right way in Indianapolis where he's been learning every year and getting better. Because he hasn't even had the great season that he's capable of yet. In the NFL. He had a really good season this year, but I know he's better. I know he can complete passes at a higher rate than what he did this year. I know he can cut down on interceptions. I know he can even cut down on sacks. He could be a much better player than he was this year even.
Yeah, so. And I think what I like about Luck is, compared to Wilson, no one, and maybe this is unfair to Wilson, but no one looks at him and they're like, he is the reason that team is great. It's just like, he has a great defense, he has a great running back, and he's a quote-unquote game manager. But you look at Luck and you're like, he ain't the result of shit other than being fucking awesome, man. Like,
no, but they have comparable acumen at the game. Yes, it's a little bit harder for Russell Wilson to throw a pass from the pocket just because of the size disparity between him and members of the defensive line who just bat balls down. But Wilson is like Drew Brees, being a shorter quarterback who knows when to pull it down, when to step forward, throw the ball, or just take 3 yards because he's not going to be able to get a ball out of the pocket in the same way that a guy who's taller like Luck can. And both those guys know when to leave the pocket. I really like both these quarterbacks, man. So to me, it'd be great. That'd be a great story to have both them play each other for the Super Bowl. I know you would watch it and you'd be rooting every second against Russell Wilson. But going back to my point, other than Luck, the other three quarterbacks were not high picks in the first round. In fact, you have a third rounder, and I believe Brady was a fifth rounder. And
thought he was sixth.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was fifth or lower. And then you have Aaron Rodgers, who was projected the number two quarterback in his draft.
He was 24, if I recall.
But it was strange because it was Alex Smith, number one overall. Ha ha. And then
I have a hard time calling. I mean, obviously you'd want Rodgers over Smith, but it's not like Smith sucks shit.
Oh, he was horrible his first decade, man. Horrible.
I mean, he ain't Ryan Leaf. We'll put it that way.
Listen, when your nickname is Small Hand Smith, you should not be drafted number one overall in the NFL draft.
That's true. That's a horrible nickname.
Yeah. He's got really small hands, man. It was really obvious to most scouts where it's just like, ooh, he may not be like
me. So he'd be a great surgeon. Or he'd be awesome in a sweatshop capacity. Nimble little knitting fingers.
In the WNFL, like, he could probably use their ball.
The lingerie bowl.
No, like, he just didn't have the hands for playing in the NFL, really. Or football, really. So that's why he's got, like, this horribly mundane way of playing. He's got a good acumen in the pocket as well, but he doesn't have the physical skills to play.
Oh, man, now you're making me... Who is it, Chris from what? Chris what from Get a Life? The guy who's also in Something About Mary?
Oh, I forgot his name, yeah.
Chris Elliott.
Yeah.
You're making me think of, like, Scary Movie 2, where he has, like, you know, like, take my little hand. I swear to God, I think that's the only scene of any scary movie I've seen, and I've seen that four times. It's just what I always flip to on HBO.
But yeah, man, I'd say, like, a Rodgers matchup with Luck would be cool. Because you have a guy who went to UC Berkeley going up against a Stanford quarterback. I think that's got a little bit of a matchup.
Like a college grudge match thing?
Yeah, there's a bit of beauty to that. And then I guess the final one I'd look at is if you got Rodgers versus Brady. Again, we're looking at this simplistically with quarterbacks because Super Bowls are all about that like simple narrative that people who don't watch the rest of the year can follow. And it always comes down to quarterbacks. So to me, Rodgers versus Brady, these two guys seem like they're on the fast track to the Hall of Fame. They have enough of an accomplished career at this stage in their careers for us to be that confident. So it's a Hall of Fame battle with those two.
This part of the season is so sad, though. These are, for my money, this upcoming Sunday is the last real Sunday of football left.
Like, the Super Bowl gets so painful.
Super Bowl sucks. Yeah. Super Bowl almost always sucks. Even when it's like, don't get me wrong, it's gotten so much tighter than when we were kids. Like, I just thought Super Bowls were always blowouts. Because of how we were raised with them.
I remember the first time the AFC won a Super Bowl because
who
like,
was it?
Oh, it was Denver. It was that crazy Denver win over Green Bay.
When they got the two in a row, yeah.
I started watching football. I was like, you know, 6, 7, 8. And I started watching when the 49ers were good. You know, the first team I followed like religiously was the 49ers. So yeah, when Joe Montana was a quarterback and first Super Bowl, I like clearly remember. I didn't really remember when the Redskins won that 42-10 game with Doug Williams at the helm. Mm-hmm. The one I clearly remember the most was when the 49ers demolished Denver 55-10.
My first viewing, I started with the first of Buffalo's four failures.
Yeah.
Those were the first Super Bowls I watched like start to finish, more or less.
Okay. The one basically like the 49ers were repeating. I don't remember watching the previous Super Bowl where Joe Montana had the game-winning drive, but I do remember starting to watch when they blew out Denver, and I just started to look into the history of the NFL, and it really had, by the time Denver finally won in 97.
I think they won it 7 and 8.
I think there were like 16 consecutive years that an NFC team won the Super Bowl. It was bad when we were kids. Like, the AFC was horrible. Absolutely
Dude,
horrible.
Like, who won other than the Skins, the Giants, and the 49ers for that decade?
Cowboys.
But the Cowboys tapped in afterward. They were
but
like,
but still, like you stretch together all these.
Okay, toss the Cowboys in. Those four NFC squads.
Yeah.
That was
you
it.
Threw
man.
One in for the Bears, but it's still like all NFC, man. It's just it's ridiculous. So like there was just a period of time where like the Super Bowl was just a foregone conclusion. The NFC was gonna win.
Yeah, and then the AFC got real starting. I feel with Peyton Manning. Not that he had like a lot of AFC.
No, it
wins.
Was with Elway, man.
Well, no, they had the two wins there, but didn't it go back to the... No, wait, hold on, Ravens, whatever. This is going to make for some really captivating radio. Everyone else just Wikipediaing who won the Super Bowl, and we're like, it was Ravens.
Yeah, no, Ravens in 2000. I have a pretty good memory of most of this, man, so yeah.
Oh, I was able... If you want to know what a idiot I am, I was talking to a friend on the phone, and I was really proud because up until the Denver Super Bowls, I was actually able to get them all year by year, who played and who won. I was very proud of that.
Yeah. No, like, then the AFC was dominant between Denver. You threw in the Ravens there one time, and then you had the Patriots. Like,
Denver,
three out of
Ravens,
four, man.
Patriots, Steelers.
Yeah. Like, it's been a pretty good run for the AFC in the last 15 years. They haven't been as dominant as the NFC in their heyday.
Well,
but,
I think,
you know,
the one thing I've noticed is it seems like the AFC teams that got to the Super Bowl were never the plucky upstarts. But those were always the NFC teams, and those were the ones that walked away with it. The only guys that I can think of defying that narrative, the Steelers one year, like when they performed like a fatality on Carson Palmer's knee.
Yeah.
They were a road team, I think, for all three games into the Super Bowl and won it. I think our picks are pretty much a foregone conclusion by the way we've been talking. We're picking both home teams to win this week, right?
I mean, anybody out there who's picking the opposite has to work really hard to come up with a reason why the Colts or Green Bay will win. I mean, I'll do my best with... I'm not even going to touch on the Colts. Like, Andrew Luck, obviously, that's what you have to talk about. You have to blow smoke out of your ass about how he's going to do it. You're going to have to make up something about how Heron's going to run the ball in a way that, like, will surprise everyone. Whatever. Maybe they'll shut him down on defense. Blah, 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 blah. I don't want to talk about that because I can't even fake an argument on behalf of Indianapolis. But I can fake one on behalf of Green Bay winning in Seattle. You want it? I know you hate Seattle. I'm going to do my best. I'm going to just fake it like I think Green Bay might win.
No.
How about that? Fuck that, everybody. I'm picking Green Bay. Even though I'm rooting for Seattle, I'm just going to say it on air because it doesn't really matter. Like, we just make picks because you look awesome if you pick the underdog to win. So I'm going to do it.
Oh, God, yeah.
That's our official position, all right? Here's what I saw in week one that's going to change now that Green Bay is coming to Seattle. First off, Eddie Lacy's going to run the ball in a way he did in week one.
Yes.
And they're going to figure out that Jordy Nelson can't just keep lining up away from Richard Sherman because Richard Sherman's not going to move sides the way that Mike McCarthy hoped week
one. Well, they'll actually throw in Richard Sherman's direction. I'll give him that much. That was the most pussy shit. Do you remember that week one?
Yeah.
They just didn't throw to Sherman's side. Come on.
So what do people want? Like, it's a game of adjustments. They're going to play differently, obviously. I just don't think they're going to close the 20 gap, reality. Yeah. But still, just because I would like to beat you instead of just come up with a crappy tie heading into Super Bowl week, I'm just going to pick Green Bay. Do you want that, or do you want the Green Bay pick?
No. I'll let you take that action in quotation marks.
That's fine. I got that. I'm rooting for Seattle, though, so I love Russell Wilson.
I'll see him the other way around.
All right.
I will root for Green Bay, but I will pick Seattle, and we're both picking New England.
There's no reason to pick the Colts. It's ridiculous.
Exactly. It'd be awesome if it happened.
Yeah.
Off the field, I guess all that's left to discuss is Rex Ryan getting hired by the Bills, which is fascinating because I think he was... was officially declared that they were like third on his list and he wanted San Fran or especially Atlanta before them as a gig.
Yeah, before this came out, I really thought Atlanta would be a great fit just because they have a proven quarterback, maybe not the greatest quarterback in the league, you know, but I'd say Matt Ryan is pretty close to being in the top 10, at least top 12.
Yeah, you picked the numbers out of my mouth. I'd say 10 to 12. And Rex Ryan can't do an offense worth a damn. We saw that abundantly like be made clear.
So that's why it's worrisome that he's going to Buffalo now, where they don't have a quarterback.
He's inheriting the same team, in essence. Like, Atlanta's defense sucks shit, and it just made sense on paper that this defensive guru would march in to a team with a stacked offense, work wonders with the defense, with what was left. It, almost like Dungy when he did the Colts, you know what I mean?
I heard Bart Scott on Boomer Esiason's radio show, and he played for Rex Ryan, and he said Bart Scott was rooting for the Falcons to get Rex Ryan just because he wanted to see him actually have an offense. This is one of his former players who's like, I love Rex, just want to see him finally have a quarterback.
Yeah, and instead he walks into a goddamn Kyle Orton.
He's retired. They're back to EJ Manuel, man.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Yeah, so enjoy that. Shitty first-round bust quarterback. Sound familiar? I mean, maybe he likes it because he gets to... I mean,
the combination of Mark Sanchez and Geno Smith rolled up into one package known as EJ Manuel.
Yeah. The only thing that's interesting about it is it makes for, what, four? He has four grudge match games now in the division. Like, he has two Jets games a year, and he has two New England games a year.
Yeah, and it's going to be especially weird because they're expecting Schwartz to walk away. There's going to be a lot of surprise.
Are they?
Well,
I thought they were trying like hell to keep him. If I'm Schwartz, I would be a little pissed that Ryan, who's in essence a defensive coordinator, came in and was like, I'm the coach now.
Yeah, it floors me that Schwartz wasn't promoted immediately. I think that's the natural move there.
Then just get an offensive coordinator who actually, you know, will coach.
Yeah, I found it all inappropriate. To me, I think like Schwartz was the natural fit. So if I were him, I would want to leave too.
Isn't that what happened with Schwartz though in Detroit? Like he was made the coach and actually got involved in the offense and didn't do much with the defense, even though you can look at what the Bills did this year. He shines on defense, man.
Yeah, it was fantastic. The problem with him and Ryan though, and why another reason why he might leave, they say Ryan's trying to keep him. But the reality is Rex Ryan prefers a 3-4, and Jim Schwartz has been running a 4-3. So
I hate 3-4s. I've 3-4s eat shit. Too personnel dependent, man.
It causes me anxiety. I think, like, as a personnel person, as a personnel VP or whatever it is they have in Buffalo, it's just so difficult to hire Rex Ryan when you run a 4-3, in my opinion, because, yeah, you're having to shift your personnel in a way that you're basically doomed to lose the first year. I don't see how you can make that kind of flip and expect to be successful in year one.
No, you had a good defense, and you're bringing in a guy who, does anyone see him just being like, okay, Jim, that's your dominion?
That's what he's saying right now. That's what he's saying.
And even if that is what happens, that's terrifying too.
Because now, like, what? Rex Ryan's going to run your offense
exactly,
for a year?
Exactly. Exactly. What the? it's not a good situation, man.
Hey, like, 5.5 mil a year, good for him. I like Rex Ryan as a person, so get that money, man.
I like him as a person, but that, to me, like, the other two situations for him, 49ers, when they're like, Buffalo was his third choice, they need to, like, show almost a bar graph. Where you see at the top, Atlanta, a little under that, 49ers, and then, like, the little fucking nubbin at the bottom. You can barely, like, is there a bar there? That would have been, like, the percentage of Rex Ryan wanting to go to Buffalo.
Hey, enjoy upstate New York next December, Rex. You're welcome.
Ugh. All right, that was Papa's Football Podcast. I'm John Papa Giorgio, joined by Howard Flood. The show site, pfpod.com. Go there for every episode we've ever done. We encourage you heartily to subscribe to the show. It's the easiest way to get it. And I used to say those words, and they used to be a lie, because I didn't subscribe to any of my pods. I now subscribe to tons of pods. It really is easy. You just have to, like, hit the podcast app on your phone, and it appears 10 seconds after I upload it. It's quick as shit. Use the podcast app if you have an iDevice, Papa's Football Podcast, P-A-P-A apostrophe S, and Stitcher if you're doing the droid thing. And Howard, the droid is for the poor, the foreign, and the nerd. You can also find Papa's Basement, the comedy show that we do, P-A-P-A, apostrophe S, Basement. I like spelling it out. Too many goddamn words for Papa's, or spellings rather. I was a fool to choose it, but I'm stuck with it. In papasbasement.com is the show's site. And last but not least, the comic I do with a buddy of mine, thespookies.com. Go check that out. I think that's it for the plugs. Oh, at Papa's Basement, I live tweet football games. That's it. Officially. Yes. Howard, don't look at me blankly. It freaks me out. Later.